Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm a traveling man. Made a lot of stuff. All over the world. And in every port, I own the heart of at least one lovely girl.
NDB Media presents Travel It's Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with my longtime friend and colleague, Christine Tibbetts. We bring you exciting and often exotic guests from the world of travel, both foreign and domestic, when we don't have difficulty logging into Blog Talk Radio. I want to apologize for the sudden cancellation of last week's show, but neither Christine nor I could sign into the website. We will bring Tanya Grossinger and her Jackie Robinson stories back to radio on June 6th. Chris?
Good night. I'm Christine, and we are pleased to present the 56th episode of Travel Itch Radio. We talk to hotelers, airline executives, authors, publicists, explorers, and many others in the travel world. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com. Check out this show afterwards, typing Travel Itch Radio in the blogtalk.com search box. Click on today's travel date, the 2nd, for this show. Give us a call tonight. Great guests. 914-338-0314, because we'd love to talk to you.
And tonight we have two guests. We have Sprague Theobald, author and documentary filmmaker, who crafted The Other Side of the Ice about his family's treacherous trek across the Northwest Passage. But first, we're going to bring in old friend Debbie Nader of Richard Nader Entertainment. Welcome to Travel Itch Radio, Debbie.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening.
Tell Travel Itch Radio listeners about the Duop reunion planned for June 1st in the Izod Center in the New Jersey Meadowlands.
Oh, we have such a wonderful show planned on June 1st at the Izod Center. It's in East Rutherford in the Meadowlands. It starts at 7 p.m. And if I may share a story with you,
sure,
about Jay Black, who is the star of the evening. Jay Black will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the song Only in America by performing at the Izod Center on June 1st. And that song, Only in America, was written originally as a protest for social ills and soon became identified with liberty and the American dream. I don't know if you knew this, but the song was recorded by Jay and the Americans with the new lead singer, Jay Black. He was the second Jay with the group, and it's his voice you hear on the recording. And the song was originally recorded by the Drifters, which you've heard at my show before, Dan.
Yes.
And at that time, there was some concern about releasing the song during those turbulent times. So the group Jay and the Americans, with their new lead, Jay Black, re-recorded the song over the same original tracks. And you can still hear the Drifter's voice in the background.
Hmm.
And that was a song special to Richard Nader, of course, because it captured the feeling of what's so important about our nation. You know, he was born of Lebanese parents, and he was the first-generation American, and he served in the Army. And when he came out, after being disc jockey in Korea, he started the Rock and Roll Revival in 1959 at Madison Square Garden. And it was so important to him because he proved that if you work hard and you become successful, like the song, Only in America, this is where it all happens. And sadly, as you know, Richard died in 2000. And this song was heard at the Bicentennial in 1976 in New York. And, of course, when Jay performs, he will be with other special guests, including Lenny Coco and the Chimes, who did Once in a While, Jay Siegel and the Tokens, The Lion Sleeps Tonight, and the original Jay Traynor, who was the first Jay of Jay and the Americans.
Right, so you're going to have both Jays. That's great.
Yes, isn't that exciting? And John Cusack and the Excellence with Coney Island Baby, The Dupree's with You Belong to Me, Jean, Duke of Earl Chandler, Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, and Maurice wrote the song Stay, Tommy Mirror and the Crest with 16 Candles. And at 3 o'clock, the gates open for the classic car display, Don K. Reed's a cappella stage, the tailgate party, and autographs with the stars. And tickets are available through Ticketmaster or at richardnader.com.
And, Debbie, you travel all over the country. There actually is a rock and roll revival circuit, isn't there?
There is a rock and roll revival circuit, and I do shows internationally. And we have a show in Toronto on May 14th. We'll be in California June 23rd.
Where in California?
It's a very busy summer. We're going to be at the Arboretum and Botanic Park in Los Angeles with Chubby Checker and Jay and the Americans and Benny King. It's a very,
very
exciting
nice show. Yeah, and you've got some Baltimore things coming up too, I understand.
We do. We have a wonderful show for the charity Chimes in Baltimore on November 2nd with, it's a disco party with Casey and the Sunshine Band, Gloria Gaynor, who did I Will Survive, and Little Anthony and the Imperials, who did, of course, Tears on My Pillow.
Because we have to have another...
All of these are listed at richardnader.com.
Okay. Very quickly, we have another guest, but tell us what some of your favorite concert venues are around the country.
Oh, my gosh, I have so many. Well, Ruth Eckert Hall, which is, of course, in my hometown. I live in Clearwater Beach, Florida, and it's one of the top 10 in ticket-producing venues by Billboard in the United States, which is very exciting. And, of course, the IZOD. This is our 24th annual year at IZOD. And there's so many beautiful venues in the country. We're going to be at Heinz Hall in Pittsburgh on December 19th with a fabulous doo-wop show. Just so,
and so all of this stuff is on your website, right, Debbie?
It is. It is. Good. Everything.
Okay. All right.
It's so exciting to be with you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm sorry for the rush, but we've got another guest with a lot to tell us. So thank you. Good luck. See you on June 1st. I'm looking forward to it. And now we're going to go to...
seeing you there.
Okay, thanks. We're going to go to Sprague Theobald, author of The Other Side of the Ice, an author, broadcaster, journalist, and Emmy Award-winning filmmaker for more than 25 years. This is Sprague's second book. He also made a documentary movie of the adventure, which will be shown in Newport, Rhode Island, June 28th, and then Martha's Vineyard. Also, he's an on-air spokesman for the Weather Channel, one of my favorite stations. Sprague Theobald, welcome to Travel Witch Radio.
Well, hi, Dan. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on.
Chris?
Sprague, it is so exciting to talk to someone who's been 900 miles south of the North Pole. That's pretty cool. Help us all know what made you decide to do this journey and something about the extent of the preparation that was involved.
Christine, the Northwest Passage has always been this mythical route that adventurers have been trying to find, probably going back to Columbus's day. It's a shortcut, if you will, from the Atlantic to the Pacific through the Arctic. And it's almost been mythological in many ways because hundreds of men have gone in hoping to find this Northwest Passage through, but very few have come out. It's claimed a lot of ships and a lot of men, and I've been blessed enough to do a tremendous amount of boating and exploring in my life, and this was one last challenge I really wanted to try to mount, to take a crack at. And as a kid, I was aware of it. It was like the holy grail of maritime adventure. So the time came. And as far as preparation went, I had a boat already. I had a very heavy-duty 60-ton trawler, so I knew the boat was definitely up to it. Crew, through the years, I had met and worked with all sorts of wonderful crew, but the really cool part of the story is the crew, in the end, came down to actually my family. We all gathered back together again, and for about a year before we left Newport in July of 2009, we worked on the boat and made sure that she was ice ready, replaced all systems that seemed fairly soft, if there were upgrades to be made as far as engine parts or injectors or things like that, we would definitely make those. We made sure we had diesel heat aboard. And just, you know, there comes a time when you can only prepare so much. So it was June 9th, 2009, that we dropped our lines in Newport and headed up to the Arctic.
What about the cost of equipment and rations?
It was a tremendous cost. It was a huge cost. But there was no way I could take on this. It was upwards of $300,000. And I was lucky enough to find a wonderful sponsor, Nordhavn Yachts, who made my boat, Bagan. And we struck a deal, and they were going to cover the full cost of the expedition. And so I went blithely long and started spending money hiring crew and replacing parts and making large investments in the boat. And then 2008 struck with a vengeance. And Nordhavn, as most other companies around the world, was just cut to their knees. And I was about $200,000 into this when they called and said they couldn't sponsor the trip.
Oh.
So we left under tremendous financial pressure. By that time, I couldn't have backed out from the trip, or there'd be no way I would be able to recoup any of that money. And so it came down to begging, borrowing, and stealing. And when I left the dock in June, when I left Newport, there were two or three people seeing us off, and I was praying to God it wasn't MasterCard, Visa, and American Express who were coming to say goodbye.
Well, what time of year did you make the trip? How long did it take? And what time of year is the safest time to go?
We left June 14th of 2009. And, of course, the summer is the time you have to go through. But what's very tricky up there is, if, and that's a very big if, ice is going to open. It only opens for about a window of 2 or 3 weeks. And then the old ice starts getting blown down from the north again. And I had been up the year before on an icebreaker, and I met some Inuit, and I talked to them and told them about my plans. And they said, don't even think about trying to find the passage until the last week of July. So we kind of did our calendar backwards from there, and that's why we left in June. And we got up, we staged just outside of the passage, second week of July, and we would watch ice charts on satellite downloads and see what was going on with the ice. And it actually started to clear the first week of August, and that's when we made the decision to head into the ice and try and get through. All in all, the trip took 5 months, five long months, and it was 8,500 miles.
Greg, you and your family have vast experience as sailors, and you certainly as that prepared you for this West Passage trek. Could any of our travel listeners, who plenty of them are adventurers, follow the lead from these shows, could anybody else think about trying?
You know, that's a great question, Christine, because what's happening up there, they're getting news reports. Obviously, we've all seen them, that the ice is breaking up earlier and there's not as much coverage. But what they're not showing, and this is where we ran into trouble, is yes, the ice is starting to dissipate earlier and it's not as extensive, but it's undoing, say, the front of a dam, which is allowing old ice, meaning 600, 700, 800-year-old ice, to come down from further north. And that's the unpredictable ice in this situation. And a very long way of answering your question, that other people are starting to look at it and say, you know, people are making it through, this is great, but it is still a very, very unpredictable, extremely dangerous area, if not for the fact that there are very few charts available up there, where a normal ocean chart would have hundreds of thousands of little depth indicators on it. A chart up there would have maybe a trail, like an ant trail, of perhaps 20 or 30 by somebody who did a survey in 1860. So you it's pretty limited. So you really have to have a tremendous amount of luck on your side, too.
Why did you and your crew decide you would not ask the Coast Guard to rescue you in case you needed it?
I've done a lot of adventures in my life and been very, very fortunate, very blessed to do them. And somewhere along the line, it kind of dawned on me that it's a simple sort of statement, but nobody asked me to go up there. So I why should I ask somebody to risk their life to come and save me if I needed it? We all agreed before we left that apart from, let's say, a severed limb, we would get ourselves out or improvise and get out the best way, whether it's plan B, C, or D, or if we had to take to the land and get out. We went in of our own free accord. And by this, I mean, we had everything that we could possibly have on board as far as preparation for emergencies. We had a defibrillator on board. My stepdaughter trained for 2 weeks with a paramedic and learned how to do IVs and administer pain relief through an IV, set broken legs. So it was, we tried to cover every base that we could.
This is not just a book about a rugged adventure, but a book about family relationships. Did you consider the risk in exposing your family to the dangers?
That's a great question. I did. I did consider it, and I should state up front that my kids, my stepson, my stepdaughter, and my son were all in their 30s and 20s. So it was, they actually came to me, Dan. They learned of the trip. We were pretty close. My stepdaughter and I were very close, and I hadn't seen my stepson in quite a while. But as they learned of the trip, they wanted to know if there was a possibility they could come along. And my stepdaughter was the first one that I signed on because she and I had done a lot of boating together. So as they came on, I made sure that they understood that they're doing this on their own volition and that there were possible dangers. And they are all very, very cool kids. They say, you know, yes, there are dangers, but the potential, the possibility that might come out of this trip is something that very, very few people would be able to experience.
You're listening to Travel Witch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Christine Tibbetts and our special guest, Greg Theobald. Call the show at 914-338-0314. Check out the archive show on blogtalkradio.com or check out Travel Witch Radio on Facebook. We're also on iTunes. Sprague, let me ask you, was weather the biggest problem you encountered?
Weather was certainly a major consideration, but the biggest problems we encountered were something I hadn't really planned on, and that was the incredible isolation and desolation of being up there. I think, if memory serves, I think we went 6 weeks without seeing another boat or another person. It was so isolated. And you couldn't just get off the boat to go for a walk to let off some steam because of the polar bear problem. So you always had to have two gun bearers with you. So keeping your wits about you, and as we got deeper into it and deeper into it, thinking about how you phrased a question or how you answered an answer, it was a very, very powerful and deep exercise for all of us. One of us, which if you get the book or see the documentary, didn't make it. He indeed did break. It was an unfortunate situation. But it's life. It's what happens.
I've done both, Greg. Read your book word by word and watched the documentary screening. And I applaud you, even though I'm pretty sure the captain would ever take me to take skills for this trip. But the wits about you, contemplating relationships as you portray them, this adventure track. Anyway, I thank you for that. And you also taught us tonight on Travelage about history and the men who didn't make it. So hooray for you that Dominique happens to be a daughter. Happens to
I
be
know.
A daughter.
Dominique. My stepdaughter
so it's not
is
just a man story.
No,
family.
It's not. It's a wonderful, wonderful story about my stepdaughter and how she managed with five other men on board.
And the relationships that you talk about so much on the show, and I think Travelage listeners and Dan and I are very interested not only in travel but the way it affects us in the aftermath. And Dominique is in nursing school now, right? After learning how
she
to
is.
Get all those potential broken legs of those men on the ship.
It definitely sparked something in her. I've known Dominique since she was 3 years old, and she has always been the mother hen in the best of ways. She has always been the caretaker. And when she went through the training, I think she sort of found her calling. And, yes, she has gone on into nursing school. It is very interesting, Dan and Christine, that when the trip ended, all three kids went back to school. And I'm not too sure where that came from. My son doubled up in college to continue with his degree. My stepson went back to concentrate on his master's degree in business, and Dominique went into nursing school. So something in those 5 months, they learned something about wanting to better and further themselves. And that's just a father guess. So.
And you made a documentary. I'll tell you something, Sprague. All of us listening want to know about the facilities on the Vegan. I mean, you always care about how astronauts go to the bathroom. In the Northwest Passage, but the kitchen. How did you do this? What are your facilities like in 57 feet of boat?
Well, I'm sort of embarrassed to list the facilities as compared to the guys in the 1850s. We were in Ritz Hotel. We had about 2 tons of food on board in 2 various freezers and refrigerators. Propane stove and oven, just like you would have a gas stove at home with a full refrigerator, standing fridge. And here's where it gets sort of cushy. We did have a washer dryer on board.
So really?
We were able to do clothes. It's one of those small stacked ones, but we were able to do clothes and a water maker that would produce about 40 gallons of fresh water an hour out of seawater, which actually halfway through the trip decided to fall apart. And if we didn't have access to fresh water, we would have been in big, big trouble. As far as other facilities go, well, boats nowadays have these wonderful things that are a blessing and a curse, and they're called holding tanks. And anything that you don't want goes into the holding tank and accumulates till you can find a safe place to pump it out.
Okay, gotcha. You talk about the water maker, and that told me, reading your book, you have to be mighty clever to repair your water maker.
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah.
Okay, you're very clear in the documentary and the book, Sprague, about relationships and blended families, step families, all of it, and I'm one of those myself. But my family's not capable to sail and captain like you and yours did, but what's your advice about arduous adventure trips, a little less arduous than yours, as a good way to build relationships?
It's very interesting because on the surface you would think this will cause so much friction and discomfort that it could blow us apart. But what happens is, it's almost, and I'm saying this in hindsight, it's almost an outward bound mentality. Petty differences don't even get a chance to raise their hand to say they're, going to exist. You start to have, as the expression goes, you start to have each other's backs very quickly. And there's a trust and a love that begins to build. And as in the book and the documentary illustrate, when the stakes get higher and higher and higher, it's this bonding. It's almost like this trench warfare bonding that occurs, that I know when I lay down and go to sleep for 4 hours in my bunk, I am trusting these others to run the boat safely and to protect me. And when they go to sleep, the same thing. So without sitting down across from each other and saying, I love you for this and I love you for that, which definitely has its place, it's a very unspoken, deep, deep commitment and building of love. It is an amazing thing, but I wouldn't recommend going through the Northwest Passage to experience it. I think there are other ways. Maybe a family camping trip to start with.
Well, Sprague, wouldn't you say that this is unlike anything that any family has ever done?
I have to agree. It is unlike anything any family truly has ever done. Just in the fact that, on the basics, we set history. We were the first production powerboat in history to do the Northwest Passage. And I think it's very unusual circumstances that everybody did bring in a talent or an ability that was directly or indirectly related to boats, so that we could all serve the needs of the trip as well. I don't think any other family has stayed in a 57-foot area for 5 months nonstop without, blowing up at each other.
I didn't appreciate Newport enough when I was there because I didn't even know to look at all those boats and contemplate a family like you. But back to really your story, not mine. You saw magnificent sights. Oh, the documentary visuals are so exciting. Did they really compensate for the fear and terror when plans A, B, C all fell through in the...
You know what happened, Christine, is when we would see these amazing sights, our mind would take them in, and it would be months later, or you'd look at the pictures. But you were so preoccupied with, and I can't stress this enough, and it's no exaggeration, you're so preoccupied, especially when we're caught in the ice, of will this be the last day, that you don't have the ability to sit there and say, you know, wow, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. But yet your mind doesn't let go of it. And when plans do fall apart and you have to move to the next plan, like when we got trapped in the ice, we had to improvise to try and get out, which didn't quite work at one point. You do see these incredible, beautiful sights, but you don't know it as it happens. After the trip is over, you can be walking down the streets of New York and say, oh, man, that was the most beautiful iceberg I'd ever seen. I mean, your mind does contain them, that's for sure.
So maybe people listening to Travelage, reading your book, seeing the documentary, contemplating that they can't do what you and your children did, maybe they'll go to Alaska's Inside Passage a more conventional way. I've been to Sitka and Juneau and, you know, other people have and will. Nothing like being on the other side of the moon like you, though.
You know, that is a wonderful way to start it. If you do go in the summer, in the season, do the Inside Passage in Alaska. It's safe, it's contained, but it's still rugged enough that you have to improvise a little. You have to kind of be on guard for what might happen next. But you're not exposed like we are, and you definitely can take a little more time and a little more comfort, and it is a thrill second to none. This is my second time I've done the Inside Passage. Unfortunately, this one was off-season, but it has to be one of the more beautiful places I've ever experienced. And it's a wonderful place where many boats go up there, and for families to get together and take a boat trip up there, it would be heaven.
Okay.
Just a couple minutes to go. Chris?
No, this is great. I mean, people need to see your documentary, and Travelage listeners, want to remind them of your website or how to buy the book or something, Sprague?
Sure. You can start off with my website. That's SpragueTheobald.com, and I'll spell it. It's SPRAGUE, and Theobald being TheobaldT.com. You'll get a tremendous amount of information from the site and see the book and see some outtakes from the documentary. If you go to Amazon as well, you can see the book, you can see the trailer for the documentary. I think iTunes is selling it. But just go to my site and you'll get a feel for how we spent our 5 months, how we spent our summer vacation, as it were.
That's great. Thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Travel Itch Radio, Sprague. I'm looking forward to seeing that documentary and wish you much success.
Thank you so much, and it's pleasure is all mine. Let me reassure you on that. Thank you.
Okay, and now it's time for a travel talk just quickly. A regular feature on Travel Itch Radio, Travel Itch listeners are eligible for a huge discount on either of the two Baseball Legends cruises I'm organizing for the American Queen Steamboat Company. Anybody who mentions Travel Itch when booking is entitled to $375 per person discount, up to $750 per cabin, plus a $50 onboard credit or $100 per cabin. The Baseball Legends cruises are July 20th from St. Louis to Cincinnati and July 27th from Cincinnati to Pittsburgh. Review the offer on the Travel Itch Radio Facebook page and then call toll-free, here's the number, 888-749-5280 to book. Don't forget to mention Travel Itch to get the discount. Chris, something real quick before we go into our closing?
Well, I think we should just tell everybody thanks to Debbie Nader and Sprague Theobald, much to think about and plan to do. With Debbie on the site and with Sprague on the edges, for sure. And next week we'll be going to New Orleans. Wonderful.
Yes, yes, we will. We will. And that is it for the 56th edition of Travel Itch Radio. Thank you again to Debbie Nader and Sprague Theobald. From all of us at Travel Itch Radio, come scratch again with Christine Tibbetts and me next Thursday at 8, when we'll be talking with Clem Goldberger of the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, just in time for Memorial Day. Check out Travel Itch Radio on Facebook for details of that show and information on other upcoming shows. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with Christine Tibbetts, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every port I own the heart of at least one lovely girl.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.